So my name is Arielle, for anyone who doesn't know. And I want to start off by reflecting on some news that came out last week about Western Trinity University. So for those of you who don't know, this was a self-described Christian university that had hoped to open a law school. And any students attending this law school, am I talking loud enough? Yeah? Okay. Any students who were going to attend this law school, and probably I think the whole university as it stands, are required to sign a community covenant, which is basically kind of a lifestyle policy, saying that, amongst other things, any prospective students would agree to have no sexual intimacy outside of heterosexual marriage. And when this came out, there was various law societies across the country who said, no, we're not going to allow lawyers who complete their training there to be accredited because doing so would endorse discrimination. And this started all kinds of legal battles that eventually made it all the way to the Supreme Court. And last week, I guess 2 weeks ago now, the Supreme Court ruled in the law society's favor. So I promise I'm not going to be, like, telling you my version of which one is the correct answer. I have some personal opinions, but that's okay. What I wanted to talk about from this is that as we were packing up our house, getting ready to move, Mike was in the kitchen doing some work and listening to an interview with the spokesperson from this university. And he was kind of defending the covenant and why they wanted to open a law school. And he kept on talking about how the community covenant was based on Christian values. And later on, he talked about traditional Christian values. And I was just kind of half listening, but I was getting really angry at this. I was getting really angry that he kept on calling it Christian values. And I said that to Mike, and he kind of encouraged me to think about why I was feeling angry. And I realized it's because I now view my values as Christian, and I didn't want them associated with what he was saying. And again, I'm not going to stand up here and tell you what I think true Christian values are. That's not the point. The point is that if 5 years ago anyone had told me I'd be standing up here and saying, yes, my values are Christian, or I see my values are Christian, or even I'm Christian, I would have laughed in your face. And I guess what I'm really going to be talking about is how I came to this point from very non-Christian, I think, beginnings. So I was raised in the Unitarian Universalist Church in Halifax. For those who don't know, that is its own little religion. It's kind of identified as its own religion. It has its roots in liberal Christianity. Even the name of it is signifying of those roots. So Unitarian refers to one God in rejection of the Trinity. And Universalism means salvation for all. Basically, so it gets rid of that idea that you need to be saved or some people are going to pass that test and some people aren't. But really, it operated as an alternative Christianity rather than a sect of it. And they do subscribe to some shared principles. And I'll kind of go through those. They're good principles. So there's seven of them. It's the inherent worth and dignity of every person, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning, the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all, and this last one's kind of my favorite, the respect for the interdependent web of all existence for which we are a part. So they're quite beautiful principles or values there, but you'll notice there's no God language in any of that, really. There's nothing more than, you know, this is how we are as humans. And very much, most people who go to that church would describe themselves as humanists or even atheists. My parents both met at that church, obviously, before I was born. I was going to say before I was born, but obviously. And both had kind of felt burned by Christianity in the past, especially my dad, who grew up in Quebec, Roman Catholic, very kind of rigid. So they were both looking for something different. They met at the church. Funny little side story, the UU church actually has its own sex ed program, and they were chosen to be like the facilitators of that and went away for training, and that's where they hooked up. So, yeah. So we did have our own version of Sunday school. I mean, it operated like a church in a lot of ways. We had our own rituals. We had kind of, we would go, we would sing in the morning. The kids would go upstairs for our version of Sunday school, which was called religious education. They've now changed it to religious exploration because I think education is even too dogmatic for them. And in that, you know, Sunday school or that religious education, we learned stories from multiple faiths. And it was no more about Christianity than the other. For sure, we learned some Christian stories, but I have vivid memories about learning I think it was my dad, actually, who did this whole talk about Islam and the use of calligraphy in Islam as a spiritual practice. Just, like, very varied. And at home, we celebrated a non-religious version of Christmas and Easter. Like, I can remember there being a nativity, but it's not like this was a big story that we told. It was just kind of there in the background. And I knew it was about the birth of Jesus, but I didn't know much about who Jesus was, except my parents just always said he was a really good man. That was their kind of thing. And Easter definitely had no connotations as a young child that this was about Jesus dying. Just like, it was when we got to search for Easter eggs. We would say grace at dinner, especially on Sundays, and say thank you, but we never prayed in my house. That wasn't something that ever happened. And, pardon? That's just how my childhood was, Atticus. I never prayed. Okay. So the idea of God that I got from my parents in the church was more about a spirit or a feeling. I remember asking my mom once, like, what is God? And for some reason, the answer, like, kind of like the wind came to me, just something that flows through. And there's a song at church that we would sing all the time, and it really informed, as a child, my idea of God. And I'm going to sing it now. It's very brief, I promise. I won't torture you guys for too long, but it's called Spirit of Life. Spirit of life, come unto me. Sing in my heart all the stirrings of compassion. Blow in the wind, rise in the sea, move in the hand, giving life the shape of justice. Roots hold me close, wings set me free. Spirit of life, come to me, come to me. And I loved that song every time we sang it at church. And I loved that was my idea of God. It was this spirit that was there, and it had a role in moving us forward. But it wasn't really an interventionist God, certainly not an old man in a cloud. And one of the reasons I love this song so much is I always felt connected to the natural world. Like, I just always felt like it was alive. I used to go out, we had this forest kind of a block from my house, and it was in the day and the age where kids could just go off and explore, and they didn't need to be, you know, supervised, and no one was going to call CFS on parents who weren't watching their children. And I would pick these trees that I felt connected to, and I would name them after people in my life that I thought were important that had passed away, and I would take these strips of fabric and tie bows around them so I could find them again. And I had an aunt, or I guess almost a godmother-like figure, who would was very interested in shamanism and had done a lot of kind of training in that. And she lived on this beach, and she taught me if I went walking on the beach and I wanted to take a rock home because it was beautiful, I had to thank the earth for it. So these are some of the teachings I got. Didn't learn a lot about Christianity as a child. And in fact, the first time I learned that Jesus was apparently the Son of God, I was in the first grade, and it became this argument with one of these kids in my class, and I don't know how it came up. I don't even think it was Christmas, but he said something about Jesus being the Son of God. Now, understand, my conceptualization of God is like the wind, so I'm like, God can't have sons, and Jesus is like just this good man. And so we had, you know, one of those, yes, he is, no, he's not, yes, he is arguments. And then, like, other kids became involved. And it was all of them saying, well, yeah, Jesus is the Son of God. And me saying, no, it's not. And then finally the teacher, who you know, was, I was in French immersion, so she was a good, you know, French Roman Catholic as well, was like, yes, Ariel, Jesus is the Son of God. And, yeah, that moment was like a formative for my identity as being non-Christian, because suddenly I realized I'm different and like, this is a big deal for me that I'm not part of this. And I also, I think a lot of my early beliefs that Christianity was a bullying religion probably came from that moment. Because it told me that Christianity isn't a faith where there's room for other opinions. Is the opinion that, like, a little, what, grade one, I would have been, what, six, seven? Seven-year-old God. And I remember going home and asking about this, and my mom said, yeah, that's what some people believe, not everyone believes that. Anyways, fast forward a few years to my teen years. I'd stopped going to church at that time. I think that's something a lot of teenagers do. For me, it was also related to, there's some weird politics stuff going on in the church, and my mom would talk about it a lot, and I felt like I had maybe permission to not go because of that. But I was on a quest at that time to find the right religion for me, and when I look back for it, I wanted to believe in God, is really what it comes down to. I had this yearning for some sort of spiritual structure in my life. And I mean, at that time, Christianity was not even an option. I was very liberal-minded, and I view Christianity as paternalistic and discriminatory. That's pretty much, and bullying, and that's how I saw it. Like, from someone being raised outside of the tradition, who was raised with very liberal values. Oh, I'm getting hot. Very liberal values, you know. This was a time when the fights over gay marriage were happening, and you know, so this was all going on, and I was just like, well, that's not even an option. So I did all my research, and I settled on paganism, which I thought was, you know, the right religion for me. So this idea of, you know, Mother Earth, and I didn't go as far as Wiccanism, which is like an offshoot of paganism, which is a very structured religion, because I was like, there's too many rules. I don't like rules. But it just, paganism seemed aligned with the connection I felt to nature, right? And it felt aligned with the feminine nature that I felt, because I also, you know, Christianity, the whole God is male, and then Jesus is a male, and I was just like, there's no room for me being a woman in here. Anyway, so I made my dad drag up this huge granite boulder from our garden. And like, so there's our garden, and then Halifax is all hill. So like, our backyard was like a hill going up and a hill going down. And of course, I found like this granite boulder on the downhill, made him carry it up the hill and then up two flights of stairs, and that became my altar. And set up that altar, like I set it up to the nines. I had candles and crystals and my ceremonial dagger and my chalice and tarot cards. And yes, I even would perform spells. I'd tell my parents, I'm going to perform a spell now, and I'd go and I'd cast the circle. And you know, in hindsight, I realized this was my first attempt at praying. Right? It was the same basic thing, except I felt like I needed to do something more to do this. And bless my parents, they just kind of went along with it. They were just like, great, she's exploring, she's going to figure out something that works for her. And I would love to, you know, ask them what they think about it now. But then again, you know, the person they chose as kind of a godmother for me was, you know, called herself a shaman. So I'm sure, you know, they were genuinely just really cool with it, which is nice. So fast forward again a few couple years into university. So I'd kind of grown out of paganism in my first year, decided this wasn't for me after all. Maybe it was partly because of all the weird looks I got. In high school, you really want to be unique and different, and by the time I came to university, I kind of wanted to fit in a bit more.
Is the boulder still in that room?
No, I think my dad moved it down. Yeah, my mom's taken over that room. It's her kind of prayer room now. But yeah, so in second year...
She still makes me move rocks for her sometimes.
It's true. I still really like rocks. Second year, I was home for the summer, and I decided, okay, I'm going to figure out this religion thing again. I go through these spurts, apparently. And I was reading about different world religions, and I settled on Buddhism then. And I kind of said to my mom, Mom, you know how some people, like, discover they're gay? I've discovered I'm a Buddhist. Like, I just, like, had this idea that this was, like, the perfect fit for what I believed. And my mom was like, oh, okay. And Halifax actually has a huge Buddhist community. So I went to kind of some of their you know, trainings and their meditation schools, and I read books, and eventually settled on, yeah, no, this isn't right for me either. Again, a lot of rules, and they have this thing against passion, right? It's all about moderation, Buddhism, and that doesn't work for me. Jane knows me well. Like, not passion, that does not work for me. I'm like, well, that's who I am, so this isn't going to actually fit all the way. So at that point, I decided, okay, I'm going to wait till I'm done university, and then I'm going to figure out the religion thing. And I would, you know, if anyone asked or if it came up in conversation, I'd say, yeah, I'm a spiritual person, but I never really defined what that meant. Like, I don't know what it meant to be a spiritual person. I think it was just my catchphrase for I believe something, but I'm not quite sure what. So fast forward again to a number of years later. I'm trying to do some quick math. So second year university would have been 2007. So then to 2013. That's 6 years? Yeah. So summer of 2013. I'd been out of school for many, many years. I'd started a career. I hated that career. I'd moved to Winnipeg before I started the career. I'd gone back to school, and I still hadn't followed up on my promise to figure that religious thing out. And something happened that summer, though. So part of my going back to school was our social work schooling. We have to take a feminist course, a 6-credit feminist course, and we also have to take a 6-credit Aboriginal perspectives course. And I love that Aboriginal perspectives course, mostly non-Aboriginal people in the class. But the professor, we were doing an exercise kind of a few weeks in about the medicine wheel and talking about the different parts of us and the different parts of us that need to be developed and nurtured. And when it came to the spiritual one, I kind of, and we were asked to share ours, so when it came to talking about the spiritual, I kind of said, you know, I have this feeling like I need to explore this more, but I just always feel like I don't have time with everything that's going on. And she said to me, you know, sometimes the things that we feel we don't have time for are the things we need the most in our lives. And that really hit me hard. I think about that a lot now. In fact, I tell my clients that a lot. You know, and it makes sense, right? Anyone ever been stressed and think I don't have time to eat? That's probably what you need to be doing right now. So anyways, this idea that what I thought I didn't have time for is what I needed most kind of got me going again. So I decided to start attending Unitarian Universalist Church here in Winnipeg. One of the good friends I'd made in Winnipeg had discovered Unitarian Universalism herself and was attending the church. And in some ways, it was great. Like, there was familiar songs. I was singing the songs from my childhood again. And there was familiar traditions. One of my favorite is the Flower Communion. We normally do this either Mother's Day or Father's Day. That particular year was Father's Day. And everyone brings a flower or a bouquet to church. And we have giant vases at the front. And everyone puts their flowers in. And then we take a different flower home with us. And it's just a beautiful tradition. We do something similar with water. After the summer break, people are asked to collect a little bit of water that was significant to them, and we all put it together and then take some water home with us. Lovely, lovely tradition. But in some ways, it wasn't doing it for me, the Unitarian Universalist Church. Like I said, most people identified as humanists or atheists, and that just wasn't working for me. I just had this sense that there was something more going on. And also, because there isn't really a creed in the church, the sermons felt really thin in order to accommodate everyone, right? They just needed to reach so many people that I felt there wasn't much substance. I didn't feel like I was going home and really thinking about it for the week to come. I kind of felt like, oh, well, that was interesting, but I kind of left it at the door. And this was also the summer that I met Mike. Hi, Mike. Wait. Yeah, okay. Lovely. I met Mike, and we went on our first date, and I, of course, we talked about religion on our first date, just because, of course, that's what we would talk about on our first date. And I mentioned that I started attending my church again, and Mike told me that he was very, I think religious is the word he used, very religious. He also, my favorite first date story, is I asked for a gin and tonic, and he came back and got me a what was it, a rye and ginger?
Suddenly not a
gin and tonic, and I was like, this ain't gonna work. You need to do what I tell you to do. You can't think you know what's best for me. I think he was trying to impress me. Right? Yeah, okay. So the next day after our date, I had this vivid memory of being on the bus and calling my mom and saying, I met this guy, he's really great, except he's Christian. And my parents actually had both recently started coming back to Christianity in their own ways. And because of that, my mom is a really wonderful person, but I think that it's part of the context of her saying, give him a chance. You know, don't discount him because of your bad experiences with Christianity. And I had a really bad experience when I was pagan in high school, dating a Seventh-day Adventist who... It was an interesting relationship, and that my belief was often used as kind of a controlling factor in a pretty unhealthy relationship. So I was a bit burned by that, and I was wary for that, but Mike felt different, so I agreed. I'd give him a chance. And at first I was pretty, we'd have some wary conversations about religion. I was pretty skeptical when he told me that he had accepted Jesus into his heart at age 4. That was something that I kind of was like, I don't know about this. But the game changer was just before Christmas that year that we met. And we were out for dinner, and we were talking about, it was Stephen Harper had recently instituted all those minimum sentencing. And it was this idea that, you know, you do this crime and there's a minimum sentence you're going to get. And a lot of people were upset about that because they said, well, it fails to take context. You know, as a judge, we should be able to take the context in and give what we feel is an appropriate sentence. And you're making it very black and white. And we were talking about a newspaper article we'd both read about a judge who was kind of flaunting this new law and saying he was going to do what was right for marginalized people whose circumstances paid into their actions, including not giving them that minimum sentence. And not only was he doing this, he was being vocal about it. He was letting people know he was doing it. And Mike said to me some version of, to me, that judge is acting like Jesus or is walking in the footsteps of Jesus, something along those lines. And that stopped me. And I was like, hold the phone. Like, I'd always heard of Jesus as a good man. But this idea of Jesus as someone who is willing to fight for the rights of marginalized people had never, ever come into my perspective before. I just had never heard of that. And that really stuck with me as well. So a few days later, while I was home in Halifax, I bought my first Bible. And I read that Bible. Well, I read parts of that Bible. Basically, I read the Gospels. And, you know, I didn't like everything I read, but I liked a lot of it. And it got me really thinking. And when I came back to Winnipeg after the new year, Mike invited me to his church. And even though I was a little bit scared, I came. And I will also never forget that first sermon. And Tim was talking about, it was that little book he had on prayer. And he was talking about the help one. And just things had been going kind of rough in life right then. And then Tim and Jane sang beautiful things that day. And I just cried. Like, starting probably 10 minutes into Tim speaking, I just cried and cried and cried. And something in me just said, this is a fit. And it was so strong, that feeling of wanting to come back, that next week, when Mike decided he wasn't going to go to church, I decided I was going to go alone. This is a big deal for me. Because normally it takes me like 4 or 5 times going somewhere before I feel comfortable enough to just walk in. Like, I'm talking about things like going to a new gym. I need my friend to like basically hold my hand and go in with me like for the first month before I'm willing to go in alone. But I felt such a sense of connection to the table that I went in by myself. And, it took me another month before I, like, said hello to Tim, I think. I was, like, so intimidated. And absolutely, I would not do communion at the time because I was like, I'm not baptized, so I can't do this. This is, anyways. And fast forwarding again to today, so there's been lots of exploring and wrestling since then. I've been to other Christian churches since then. They don't work for me. Some of them make me really angry, and some of them make me feel like going through the motions. So the table is where I fit, and I've got a pretty good grasp now on what I do believe. I believe that people are inherently good, and that all creation is inherently worthy of dignity and respect. And for that to be true, and not just some arbitrary idea, there needs to be a source. There needs to be a creator. Because otherwise, that's just an idea. And I don't think it's just an idea. I think it's a truth. And some call it God. Sometimes I call it God. Other times I call it the universe or spirit of life. But I believe it's the source of all. I believe that our purpose in this world is to care for each other. And that all of living things' purpose is to maintain the balance and harmony in our world in order to protect and perpetuate creation. And I believe that the example set by Jesus is the best way to live my life if I want to feel connected to the Spirit or to God. And I don't think that's the best way for everyone, but it's the best way for me. I have a pretty good grasp on some things I don't believe, like original sin, or the idea that by accepting Jesus I get a free pass to the afterlife. And it doesn't really matter what I do. I can just keep on saying I'm sorry. And I have an acceptance of things that to me are a mystery, which, I'll be honest, a large portion of Christian beliefs fall into that, in terms of whether God's an interventionist, if Jesus himself was God, and what happens after we die. But to me, it's okay to have these things as a mystery and remain an unknowing, because it wouldn't change the way I'm choosing to live my life. And I wrote this last part out because it's important to me, so bear with me if I'm kind of looking more down instead of up at you guys. Because even if all those things don't matter to me, they might matter to you, and I think that's wonderful. All it means is that when we share space together each Sunday, and Tim or another member of our community gets up here and speaks, we'll each take away a different meaning from what he has shared. And I don't think that that is unique to our church. I think it happens in every church, probably with every sermon. What is unique, however, is at the table, I think it's explicitly encouraged for us to all take away our own meaning and all come with different ideas. The Unitarian Universalist Church was also like that, and perhaps that is what gave me the permission to explore my faith, even though I'm sure at times my parents thought I was crazy. Especially my poor dad dragging that rock up two flights of stairs. But now that I've found my fit, I want to dig into that. I want to dig into exploring who Jesus was and what he said and why he thought that the way he was moving through the world was, you know, so closely connected to God. I want to surround myself with other people who strike that fine balance between feeling like God and Jesus are important to their life, but aren't interested in dictating to anyone else what that should look like. And I am so grateful to have found exactly that at the table.